Recording.
Hooray.
Yay.
Okay, so my laptop is going like, an iPad has been using FaceTime. If you don't want that, you should fix it in settings. And I'm like, listen, MacBook Air, you're not in charge. My iPhone's in charge. You're in charge of all the devices. You don't get to tell me that FaceTime's, and it's on my fucking iPad. And it's like, my Mac is like trying to tattle on my iPad for using FaceTime.
Macs are so funny. Mine will often tell me that I've left my Mac, but like my phone will be like, just a warning, you've left your Mac behind. And usually it's A, when I've left my home. So yes, I have left it behind. Or B, when I'm in transit and it'll be like behind me in the laptop bag. It'll be like, you left it behind. It's somewhere on the highway. And I'm like, it's with me.
I feel like that's never, like, none of these little notifications have ever helped me.
I guess we can greet our squad. Hi, squad.
Hey, squad. What's going on?
You know what? I have to run this by Brittany. I guess now's a good time to do some light business. I was like, I should write an intro where we tell people what this podcast is if they're new.
Oh my God, we should do that. We're usually like, oh, hey, sit down, stay a while.
Yeah, we talk to, we know, we speak to our existing fans, and that's important too, because they've been here, you know, and they've been dedicated on like you new people who didn't know we existed.
Sydney, Perth, we're talking about you.
Sydney, Perth, hello. Exclusively to Sydney.
Or the robots
and Perth.
From Australia. Whoever.
The happiest day of my life was reading that we had a following in both Sydney and Perth, Australia.
I was like, oh, blowing up all the Australian markets.
I was like, I am flattered. My God, like, I'm truly honored because these are other continents. I almost said countries, which is also true.
Remember in school where they're like, Australia is the only country that's also a continent. And we were all like, what?
We were like, that can't be true. No, I didn't question it. I didn't even know.
We were in like first grade and our minds were blown. We were like, what?
If anyone is new here, first of all, thank you. Hi. How did you find us? Write in. Tell us, please. And you probably caught on from our title. We are Elite Squad Pod, SVU in review, meaning that we recap Law & Order SVU in review because it's been on for a long time. We don't do the new episodes.
We don't. And we never will because we don't care.
No, we don't. And that's another thing you should know about us. We rebuke the new episodes. Anything that from when Stabler left. Rebuke.
Yep, rebuke. It's like lightly okay until like season 18, but I still don't care to recap seasons 13 through 18.
I gave up after that that guy, that like serial killer who like kidnapped Olivia. I was like, I'm done with this.
Oh God, that was so boring. And they kept bringing him back.
Yes.
They're like, he's not done yet. I was like, oh.
This is all to say, Sydney and Perth, this is why we're not recapping those episodes. I can't.
I'm barely, like, going to be serious through this episode.
Oh, neither am I. No, this is another, we actually got a treat with this episode. So we are recapping, it's my turn, and we are recapping season 2, episode 17, Folly. And I liked this one because we didn't really have to take it seriously. We didn't have to feel bad for anyone.
No, I truly didn't.
No, not one person, actually. Truly none.
I kind of wanted to feel bad for Tag Jones, but he was... I can't remember his name in this episode, but...
Tommy! Another gentleman they kept insisting was young. And I was like, I need to stop. Maybe it's just me, but again, not seeing a young man here.
I also hate little boy names for grown men.
Agree.
Like Billy, Tommy,
Stevie,
Joey, Stevie, mm-hmm.
Benny.
Oh, well, there is a Benny in Rent.
Oh.
And he's Taye Diggs, so he's hot, so there isn't really an issue.
That's different.
But if he was not hot, I would have an issue.
It kind of cancels it out. Yeah, you're right. And he was successful, too. And I was voice taking notes, so I did go through and edit them, but there might be some. Stabler was called Stapler for a while.
Stapler.
And then Craigan was Craig.
Craig.
Craig. So there might Craig. Be a few of those in there where it's like, Craig. So, oh, another note, because I have to. We are back in February and we enter into March towards the latter
half. Thank God. Finally. Finally.
Yeah, that was the longest February. My God.
Oh my God.
You can probably guess what happens in this episode because it's been happening this whole effing season. At the awards, we're going to just have to, an entire awards going to the season, though I won't say it.
Seriously.
Won't spoil it. So opening scene, we have a wedding receptioning. Oh God. See, I always forget. It's like, Paige, remember that when you write these notes, you're writing them for reading. a wedding reception is happening at a hotel.
Oh, I love a hotel opening.
The wedding party is taking photos and the bride is complaining to the groom that some wedding thing, I think it was like the bridesmaid's stupid crowns, they came out wrong. And she's like, oh, I should have just done it myself. It would have looked better, which is so wrong. It's just not true. So she's saying that to her groom and he's like, oh, like, shut up. I don't care. So right after this, a handsome young gentleman who is only in his undergarments stumbles out of a doorway and says, help me. And then collapses face first into the ground. And everyone's like, oh,
I'm so mean. But as a former bride, I would have been so pissed. I would have been like, I paid so much money. You couldn't have stumbled into a different part of this hotel.
Well, on that note, I wonder, I mean, do you try to sue? You can't, or not sue. Sorry, I'm dramatic.
I would have sued him.
I mean,
been like, fucking.
But you probably could have sued Leslie.
I would have. I'm already pissed about my crowns that were the wrong color.
Right. No, you're right.
Now I'm going to get what I want.
Stabler and Olivia arrive. They both look really annoyed because this is just a shitty week for them. We're back in February.
They've had a long February.
Yeah. If you remember, it's been a lot. Go back. Actually, anyone new, go back and listen to the last, like, go back and listen to all of season two, starting from, just go back.
I think like the last five episodes we've been in February. Wasn't Ashley Austin Black in February?
I think she might have been.
We had Conspiracy in February.
Yeah, we had Countdown. That was
February.
Exhausting. Yeah, they were investigated by IAB last week.
So like twice in February.
Yeah. So Benson, annoyed again, mentions how 10 people saw the victim come out of the doorway, but no one else followed him. And she truly says it as though she's just tired of this already. She's like, 10 people saw him come out of the doorway alone. No one followed him. Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know what she means. Like, no one was following him down the hall.
Like, murderer.
They called the cops.
Yeah, like the murderer didn't come out and go, hey, you get back here.
Excuse me, it was me.
Yeah, get back here and let me kill you. Like, is that what she's... All last episode, they were doing that too, or two episodes ago. They were like, why is no one solving this crime for us?
I would also like to say that they are really rude to hotel staff.
Yes.
Like, they always act like the hotel staff is trying to, like, pull a conspiracy.
Impede the investigation. They're like, sorry, if we don't know how to handle murders in our hotels.
That's why we called you.
Yeah, we called you, which this comes up to. But they never really answer the question. They're like, wait, why is SVU here again? And we're like, semen. So they speak to the CSI guy.
Who is so hot.
Yeah, both the CSI guy and the responding officer are really
hot. What the fuck?
So the CSI guy tells us that the victim is named Thomas Dowd. We call him Tommy from here on out. He's 21. Okay. And he's from, he's in college and he's from Queens, or he was in college. So right before Tommy passed out and got hauled away to the hospital, he didn't mention anything of note. Apparently he muttered something about going upstairs to get it on. The responding officer mentions that this case seems similar to another case that happened recently, wherein a couple was also getting it on in another hotel, and the female whacked the male. And by whacked, we mean she literally smacked him. Much like Tommy, she smacked the shit out of him. So Benson's like, we're going to need more information on that case. So up in the hotel room where Tommy came from, they find blood on the floor and a broken ashtray. So there we go, once again, whacked. Stabler thinks that Tommy was with a pro, and they say pro 50 times. That's our new word. So pro means sex worker.
They just come into this case really aggro, like very convinced that Tommy's done something wrong.
Thank you.
Which he has. But they come in like real, like for a victim, they're like, was he seeing a pro? I have to remember they're coming off of February.
Right. They're in a mood. You're right. We have to give them a little bit more. We have the luxury of deciding to take breaks. You know, like we took Thanksgiving week off. We took Christmas week off, you know. But they don't get to do that. They have to work every case.
Yes.
Apparently. Yeah, so Stabler thinks Tommy was with the pro and that he got rolled. And that's because cash was missing from Tommy's wallet. They ask the CSI guy if they checked for semen yet, and he's like, we were just about to. And he flicks the lights off, and boy, is that a lot of semen. There's just semen everywhere. Yeah, nope, there's semen on the floor, leading up to the bed. The step up to the bed also has semen on it, like the side of the mattress has semen. The headboard has semen.
That's a lot.
Semen everywhere. Well, it is a hotel.
It is. So I don't think it's all from the crime?
No. And Olivia does remark. She goes, doesn't anyone have sex in the bed anymore? And then right after that, they show us, like, the comforter, which, you know, spoiler, has semen smattered all over it, like smatterings. Benson says, the earth moved. Stabler responds, and they saw stars.
This is such a CSI opening.
Thank you. I was like, why does this feel wrong? So now it's like dun 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 theme song, and then we're in the hotel hallway. So another responding officer, who I don't think it's the hot one, so it's like another one, he shows Benson and Stabler to this couple in a room that's, they're on the same floor as Tommy's room was, and they heard the commotion. So this couple says that they're from Altoona, Pennsylvania, and they heard the commotion around 8:30 p.m. after they returned from a matinee and dinner. So they didn't see anybody, they just heard a woman screaming like she needed help. The woman telling us is like, it sounded like a woman screaming for help. We're from Altoona, Pennsylvania, and it made me want to tune
in. We don't know any better.
What? And, oh yeah, and the husband goes, does that kind of thing happen a lot around here?
That's the other thing that always happens in hotel episodes. Like, someone's like, kind of like, oh, we've always heard New York's pretty dangerous, but this is awful.
Oh, is this something you have to deal with a lot? Yeah. So downstairs, Finn and Munch are speaking with a receptionist. I didn't take notes on her, but she was like, they tried it with her. They were like, we're going to make this girl a star. There was just like bits. And it, for no reason, like the information was so easy to get otherwise. Like all they found out between her bitten and a bopping was that the room was in Tommy Dowd's name.
They tried to do that thing like where in Sophomore Jinx, they gave that random girl that line.
Yes.
That's not his schedule. That's fucking what's-her-face's schedule.
Bro, they do that later with the lab tech who solves the crime, basically. They're like, here she is, and she looks like Carrie Russell, and she's going to solve the crime. And I'm like, why does she get to solve the crime? So annoying. I'm like, I like this episode. So annoying.
So annoying.
Yeah, so they're talking to the receptionist. She reveals that the hotel room was in Tommy Dowd's name. So, oh, I wrote for us, kind of unimportant. Oh, I guess I was doing this because I was like, I don't need to mention it, but it was in the script that they ask for the residents, the names of the residents that were on the floor, but there were no people in the rooms next to Tommy's room or across from. So no one of use.
And again, Munch and Finn seem kind of like pissed at her.
Yeah.
They're like, there wasn't anyone around. And she's like, it's the slow season.
Yeah. She's like, it's February. They're like, we're aware what month it is. Been a long February, and they made him change it to December because February didn't sound as good.
They were like, Adam, this sounds terrible, make it December.
There's not even 31 days. There's longer month is December. It doesn't even make sense, Adam. Dun dun, the bullpen. This is a bit of a hilarious bit, although I don't know why we were treated with it.
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, so it was kind of like Stabler's cold.
Yes, it was a lot like Stabler's cold, which came to an unsatisfactory end. But this one, we got no resolution. It just was happening.
Like, could they not use that set? But also, then how were they able to use the set to show that they couldn't use that set?
I guess I can confirm that no work was actually being done while they were filming because they would have heard it in the background. But I don't know why. So what's going on is the squad enters the bullpen to find that it is being papered off by little men in hazmat suits due to, I always assume it's asbestos when this happens.
I think they say it's asbestos.
Yeah, asbestos. I think it is.
Because it's not lead abatement.
So Finn's really upset because cancer. Cragen asks for his rundown. He walks over, like, it was kind of like a comedy cut. He, like, comes off screen. It's like, what do we got?
And they're like, can we talk about this?
Yeah. They're like, no, can you tell us about what this is? And he's like, it's best dose. So they give him the details that we already know, with Benson adding that there was another case. Well, we already knew this, too, but we have to tell Cragen. There was another case from the recent present that matches the details of this one. And this is what Hot Cop was telling us earlier. A businessman from out of town, because, you know, there can be businessmen everywhere, but this one was from like Toledo or whatever.
I think St. Louis,
Missouri. That's true. You're right. It's all coming back.
I told you I don't remember much about this episode, but I have like weird flashes of where I'm like, St. Louis.
He picked up a woman named Samantha and brought her to his hotel. Not the same hotel, in case you were wondering. So after sex, she clocked him over the head with a phone, took his cash, but left his ID and everything else. So Cragen echoes the pro theory, and he says pro because that's our word that the writers got obsessed with this week. Stabler also throws in that the businessman said that the woman wanted him to get rough with her, but he wasn't into it. So after refusing the rough play, she hit him over the head with the phone.
Queen.
Munch thinks that this has vice written all over it. So once again, we don't really know why we're here. And I agree. But Cragen's like, yeah, well, when we can rule out a sex crime, then we'll pass it over to vice. And I'm like, but is it simply the semen? Is that what makes it a sex crime?
You know them, I almost called you Krista. You know them, Krista. Semen or panties.
Semen or panties.
And they can make it about them.
Right. And you know, some of you are probably sitting there going, well, guys, you haven't talked to the victim yet, so we don't know. But it's still, so we're still wondering after we talk to him. We're like, but.
And it's, I guess this is a sex crime. It's a crime that happens during sex.
But once again, it's an example of Munch being like, can we have a break? Because. It's been
we're
a
tired.
Long fervor. A long
and this episode will be called A Long February.
A long fervor. So Benson answers, while this is happening, she literally, two times this happens in the episode where they answer the phone like super quick. And then they're like, huh, got it. Tommy is now awake in the hospital. So we done it over there. Tommy's mom, who has done nothing wrong, but I hate her. I don't know why.
I like her later.
Yeah, later. And this is one of two scenes. And for some reason, and she's here for all of 30 seconds. And I was like, go out. I think just because she's a bad actress. But she was like, can you believe it? He got mugged or something. She said she got mugged. She's like, he got mugged. What are you going to do about it? And they're like, can we talk to your son, please? And she's like, fine, I'll go make a cup of tea.
Can we talk about the bandaging job on Tommy?
It's so weird.
I think it's because, like, so the actor Eddie Cahill famously had that, like, haircut. Like, that's the haircut he had on Friends as mm-hmm. Tag Jones. So I think they probably wanted to cut his hair a little shorter so the bandage didn't look so fucking stupid. But it's, like, wrapped almost comically around his head. Like, some blind nurse came in and was just like, here we go, Tommy. You're gonna be fine.
Also on NBC, I believe. So they were probably like, you can't even argue with us.
That's true. This was his job in like the early aughts. He just played hot guy. He was hot guy on Friends. He was hot guy on Sex in the City.
No, right. Well, here. So I was going to say, now that we have a slightly better look at Eddie. Oh, well, it is him. Tommy, our victim. We can introduce him. It's Eddie Cahill. And I am personally not familiar with him. At first, I was like, Henry Cavill, is this the same man? And they're like, no. No, it's not. So yeah, he was Tag Jones on Friends, which I, even though I am not a Friends watcher, controversial. He was Don Flack on CSI New York, Sam Vordee on Under the Dome, which I've never heard of, but he was in a lot of episodes, so I wrote it down. Connor Wallace in Conviction. And he also played, as Brittany mentioned, a man named Sean in Sex and the City, and then a man named Sean in Charmed, both in 2000.
He's Carrie Bradshaw's bisexual boyfriend in a very problematic episode where the ladies talk about bisexuality really ignorantly. I think Carrie goes, isn't it just a stop on the way to Gay Town? Oh, and then she makes out with Alanis Morissette. It's a problematic episode, but it's really good.
Tommy tells Benson and Stabler that he went to a bar with the intention of meeting a friend and watching a football game. The friend never showed up. And he decided to stay and watch it anyway. So they shame him. It kind of, I got a weird, they were kind of like, that's weird. He just stayed and hung out alone. And I'm like, I do that a lot.
Well, like we said, they come in really hot on him.
Yeah. They're like
immediately they're like, so he hired a hooker, even though he's like one of the hotter guys we've seen on the show.
So while at the bar, he meets an attractive woman named Jill, to which I say, Jill again.
I know, we get another Jill.
I'm like, all right, let's just Steven, Stefan, Tanzik, Tarznik, whatever. So they hit it off, Tommy and Jill, and they decide to go to a hotel. Stabler asks, and how much did Jill want? But Tommy says it wasn't like that.
And I'm also like, the crime was done to him.
I know.
He's the victim. You know, if this was a fucking girl who looked like Maureen, he'd be like, we will do whatever it takes to find this person. And he's like, so how much did you pay her?
I know, he'd get down to her level and be like, hey, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what happened. Doesn't matter. I got a daughter like you. You know, there was a guy, he ran insurance out of his garage in Queens. So all the kids loved him. And Stabler, don't tell that story again.
We're so done with this story, Stabler.
Don't tell the Queen's Child rapist story. Everyone hates it, Stabler.
Everyone hates when you do that.
Please stop. Kathy's the only one who wants to hear that story.
Like, what the fuck has Tag Jones done to them that they are just, like, up his ass immediately?
Brittany, as a beautiful girl, you know exactly what he's done to them, and that is be beautiful, and that's a crime. People yes. prosecute that crime.
They're like, oh, he's a poor hot guy?
Mm. Ew!
Not a rich hot guy?
Ugh. Ugh. At the hotel, Tommy is the one who books the room, a la what we heard. You know, it was on, the reservation was under his name. And Jill tells him that she's a little shy. And she asks if he would stay down in the lobby or in the bar area for like 10 or 15 minutes while she goes up to the room first. So he complied. And then when he got to the room, she was waiting for him in bed. And then they went at it like there was no tomorrow. So says Tommy. Next thing he knew, he was in the lobby and the wedding party was surrounding him. They asked him to describe Jill. And he says that she was blonde and buff and attractive. I personally wouldn't be happy being described as buff. I know what he means. I think he meant like fit, like she obviously works out, but like buff makes me think like, yeah, she's buff.
Muscular. And we've seen Jill. She's not like super muscular.
No, she actually doesn't even look buff, but it was just a strange. It makes me think like, oh yeah, the type that could pick you up and put you down.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
During the encounter, Jill wanted him to fight her because she liked it rough and he went along with it. Benson and Stabler leave, and Benson suggests that it's possible Jill has second thoughts after asking people to rough her up a little, and then she fights back by way of
almost killing them.
Stabler says they should go back and speak to the bartender who was tending bar the night that Tommy met Jill. Dun-dun, the bar. Bartender confirms Tommy's story, except he says that Tommy actually handed Jill the key while they were at the bar, versus Tommy said that they randomly decided to go to a bar and purchase a room on the spot.
And also, that hotel isn't like one of those like by-the-hour motels.
Yes, I was going to say. It's also kind of a nice hotel, and so I don't think, and also I don't know how many hotels in the modern age are like up for just a drunk couple stumbling in being like, your finest room, sir.
Yes, can we have a room?
Right. The bartender says that he's seen Tommy in there before, and he says something to the effect of, it's so weird, a good-looking guy like that, I don't get it. Stabler's like, what do you mean? Well, some of his dates are old enough to be his mother, says the bartender. So now they're like, maybe he's the whore.
They're like, we don't have to care about what happened to him.
Dun dun, the bullpen. So the asbestos issue is escalating. Finn is now wearing a mask to avoid cancer. Stabler and Benson enter, and Benson says, where is my desk? So then Craigen appears from a staircase in the background, standing as if he's in the opening scene of Rent. And he says that he had to move the desks into the hallway, but he doesn't explain why. He's like, I had to move them into the hallway. Get up here. So he beckons them up these stairs that to the second floor none of us knew existed. I don't think I knew that there. Maybe I did and I just forgot, but I don't think I've ever seen this.
It's kind of cozy up there, too.
It is.
Like, what is this?
On the way up the stairs, Benson tells Craigen that Tommy lied to them about the hotel room and that he was seen cavorting with older women. So Craigen quickly suggests that Tommy is the pro rather than Jill the batterer. Someone is a pro here. Detectives Porter and a girl would probably be like, I don't know, is it possible this broad's crazy?
And they're like, no, someone here is a pro.
And they'd be right.
I mean, they're right this time. Let's not forget they spent an entire episode last season being like, this girl, this prostitute. And then she was just a poor college student trying to have fun.
Exactly. Actually, they did it. It was Pixies this season, season two. They kind of did it with that when they're like,
well, oh, yeah, Pixies, where yeah. They spent like half the episode looking. They're like, oh, this underage hooker. And I'm like, she was a gymnast, you idiots.
In nice clothes. I know. And they refused to acknowledge she was wearing nice clothes. They were like, she was out jogging in whore clothes. And like, they were like, Lululemon up the times. Like, what is happening? So Craigen tells them to search the databases for his name in their, you know, sex worker shame list. They're like, dun dun. Hospital. Confirmed Tommy has been arrested for prostitution and he is a sex worker or escort, as he keeps insisting. He's an escort. You'll notice that none of the women we've encountered thus far who have been escorts were like, escort. Escort. He works for an escort service and this client who attacked him, Jill, offered him $1,000 for extracurriculars that night. He tells him that he got involved in escorting after his father passed, and unbeknownst to his family, his father was a big old gambling addict, and so he left them with a heap of debt. So they were apparently going to lose their store, their home, and Tommy decided to get into escorting in order to help his mother with the bills. Tommy is very defensive about his escorting. First of all, they sometimes will try not to call, they'll be like, prostitution. He's like, escorting. I'm an escort. And he says that a lot of guys in college do it to get by. Okay. So essentially, this escorting service, it's being dragged around town by older women to like their rich lady events so that they aren't seen alone in society. So it's supposed to truly be the act of escorting, you know? So the rate is $600 an hour with a minimum of 3 hours, and he gets 40% of that income. So it's essentially like an easy $1,000 a night. So they ask him about the sex part, and he's like, well, yeah, if a client wants to offer me extra money for sex, who am I to say no? And the time he got arrested was because the woman who he was on a date with offered him money for sex, and it was a cop, an undercover cop. So Tommy's whole view of escorting, in my opinion, is like very... In this universe, it's a very male-privileged company he works for.
Yes.
Female escorts are in danger, like, 99% of the time. You know, like, because even if there's not... So even if you don't know if you're about to have a dangerous encounter, like, anytime you're dealing with men, it's, like, potentially dangerous. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so even going on dates, like, very few men, I think, enter a first date worried, what if she starts to stalk me? You know, like, what if she yells at me? Yeah, like women usually go in, they're like, oh my God, like, what if I get a stalker out of this? What you've been saying, they seem kind of mad at him for all of this.
Yeah, and again, he is the victim.
He's the victim, and he even says that. He says, it doesn't change what happened to me. And Benson goes, yes, it does, if you raped Jill. And I'm like, what? How did we get there, though?
There's literally no complainant. Like, there's no woman being like, I was raped by that. Like, what are you talking about?
Right. And it's kind of like, so it's like there's a thread of, I get it there because I'm like, well, yeah, because why would she have like hit him, obviously. But then they also, I'm like, but aren't you investigating that other very similar attack that the hot cop mentioned? Like, I guess they do later because then we address it. But I thought they already were.
They already know this is like a serial. I truly don't understand where she's coming from.
No, exactly. Like, it's very. So that's what we mean. We're like, why are you like mad at him? Like, he's still got the, you know, brain matter smacked out of his head. Like, he's got a bandage on his ear.
If I were him, I'd be like, OK, well, go find her and see what she says. Oh, you're here yelling at me.
It is like, you know, and again, like so I was saying, like a man definitely wrote this, but this is where it's not fair to men, because I think it normally, if it were a girl, they'd be like, well, yeah, the guy got rough with her because she refused whatever he wanted to do. But like, women are so much less prone to this type of bizarre behavior. They're like, you probably raped her, you prostitute.
It's like, she paid me. What do you mean?
Right. Like, are they thinking that he is a sex worker who then also raped a client?
Who isn't anywhere complaining about that.
Right.
I think they truly just don't want to investigate this, so they're just hoping he'll shut the fuck up so they can go home.
No, I think you're right. I think they're trying to bully him into being like, never mind, it was a lie. I hit myself with the phone or whatever, the ashtray. Done. We head to Man About Town.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Just like Ooh-wee.
Yeah.
Escort services.
Formerly known as Ooh-wee Escort Service. No, I'm just kidding. What was the one? Oh, Red Light Race.
Rainlight Raves.
So we meet Leslie DeSantis, the owner of this reputable business, which is run out of like a corporate building. So Leslie DeSantis is played by Patricia Kalember. I think it's like Kalember, but I want to say Kalember. And her birthday is December 30th. Tomorrow.
Oh my God. Happy birthday, queen.
Happy birthday.
You are a queen. I kind of like her character.
I do too. I mean, she's kind of a dick, but like in a way, again, in a way that I found fun. For tracking, we are recording on Sunday, December 29th, and her birthday is tomorrow. So that's exciting.
God.
She will also return for 10 episodes and Law & Order SVU as trial judge Karen Tatum, I think is the name. Although it's telling me that I have it spelled wrong, and I'm like, well, yeah, it's a last name. But
it's a last name.
It's a last name. So I think it's Karen Tatum. So we will be seeing her again. She's also been in tons of other shows and movies. I wrote a note for me to pull up the list, but she's pretty well, her dance card's full of projects. So in this scene, she has a lot of makeup on. And I always say that because later on when she has no makeup on, it's like a complete 180.
She did look really different. I was like, yeah. I was like, oh, shit. Okay.
It was like from madam to ma'am. I was like, my God, what happened? So we open in on her in this like beautiful luxury office that she's running her whole business out of. And she's telling BNS that Tommy is a client favorite, basically because he's handsome and a big old sweetie. She was like, yeah, everyone loves him. He's a big sweet, sweet. She reiterates, Leslie reiterates her business model. The young lads are hired to literally escort older women around town, the men about town, while their husbands are away on business. So they are upper crust ladies. So it's not a shameful practice, actually.
It's rich, so it's not bad.
Even though I myself would never be caught dead, I'd be fucking humiliated.
Paying money for someone's time?
Yeah.
No.
Especially a man. Like, no.
Also, if they're that rich, can't you just, like, go to your, like, country club and go up to one of the pool boys and be like, $100, come with me to this.
There's so many dudes that just like to cheat on their wives in that community. Like, just go find one of your husband's friends to fuck. I don't know. Like, yeah. It's just embarrassing. They can do whatever they want. I just think it's embarrassing. And they kind of bring that up later, actually, during the conspiracy part. I'm like, is this all because this is kind of embarrassing? And I was like, yes, once again, I wrote, men wrote this because this is the safest and cushiest portrayal of a third party escorting ever. Like, they're in, like, a corporate building. Leslie seems like a nice lady.
I've seen stuff like that on, like, I don't know if it was like SVU, but like CSI, they would like go like to these like nice buildings and they'd be like, this isn't prostitution. These are escorts. They just go with the men to the parties. But then, of course, at like the end of the episode, you always find out that like,
it's
not the case.
Right. Because of course not. I would just never. They would ask me. They'd be like, do you want to, like, rent this 21-year-old for the night? I'd be like, no. God, I'll just go find one who's desperate. And not financially. Or both. But for free. I'll find one for free. But you know what? Then I thought about it. I bet Leslie's boys are clean. So it's probably, you know, bet Leslie tests her boys.
And I wouldn't want to, like, have a bad test in front of her.
I bet Leslie smacks him with a bag of Valencia oranges so it doesn't bruise.
Probably does.
Leslie is snippy and dry with them, and she's super offended by the suggestion that sex work happens during these dates. She says that if she ever finds out about sex transactions, the call boy is immediately terminated.
We don't do that.
We don't do
They're
that.
They're like, okay.
Now please get out while I apply more blue eyeshadow. Done. I think they're in the bullpen, but I started writing in my notes later, like, when they had to move away from the bullpen. So, I think they're in the bullpen. But Finn, Munch, BNS are gathered around, sharing the details of their investigations. Finn tells them that Jill Lazard, this woman that's almost killed Tommy, the real Jill Lazard, is miles away in Illinois. And her credit card was stolen and used at Mad About Town. Can you imagine to be Jill Lazard and you're like, someone used it at a prostitution den?
I'd be like, oh my God.
God, me, Jill Lazard. I own this Walgreens. Sabler comments that the perp now has identity theft and two assaults under their belt. And just then, Cragen enters behind them and says, make that three. He always waits.
Oh, God.
I swear he lingers out there.
Well, it's like that time he, like, chased them to the elevator to be like, no one's going home tonight, but then doesn't, like, follow up.
Yeah. And then he just stands there and they're all like,
why?
So, done, the Beaumont Hotel. Benson and Stabler are responding to this one, and they are greeted by the same cute CSI guy from earlier. He tells them that the weapon of choice for this attack was the phone, and he shows them the bloody receiver, and it's just, like, dunked in blood.
Oh, there's blood everywhere. This was actually, like, a pretty gruesome scene.
There's blood all over the floor again. It's all over the pillows. It's prompting Benson and Stabler to ask how the victim is, of course, and the CSI guy says that they're like, he's alive, but they don't think for much longer. I actually don't know if they confirm he ever dies. Do you remember?
Much like the fate of one of our other victims, I don't think they ever, like, say anything.
No, I think you're right, because, like, they kind of make reference. They're like, yeah, he's about to die, but he never, like, quite dies. So Stabler, oh, I left Stapler in there. Stapler says, I bet my vacation we have another sex worker. But Paige wrote sex worker in her notes. I think he said pro again. So, done. Now we're in Cragen's temporary office, which is in, I think it's the hallway atop the miscellaneous stairs. And speaking of miscellaneous, there's just miscellaneous furniture shoved in here. Madness. Olivia is sitting alone on a massive tartan couch. Matches her sweater. It's both funny and fetching.
And we never see this couch again.
We have never seen it before or since.
It is such a weird side plot. Because you know sometimes in a TV show when they have these like weird side plots, it factors into them like solving the mystery.
Yeah.
Like it's like, oh, because everything's so messed up, Olivia found this case file that she wouldn't have seen before and it's able to make... No.
Everyone is kind of like, because now they have another countdown situation. Which, I mean, I would argue, I guess now once there's a second victim, they're like, fuck, we have like a serial situation happening here. So they're all really cranky because they're like, we just got done with this. The victim is Victor Coe, and he is another sex worker, as confirmed by his 3 prior arrests for prostitution. They have a sketch of fake Jill, and they showed it to the Beaumont bartender, and he confirmed that he did see Victor and, he did see her with Victor, and they performed that whole pass the key, wait 15 minutes bit. So the TLDR is, they think fake Jill is now targeting sex workers because they're more likely to play along with her weird thing. This like, customer is always right, as Cragen says.
Which is so funny because they have no way of like knowing that that's what happened here because the guy can't talk.
Yeah, I think that's where I kind of paused. You probably noticed. I was like, why did I get weird there? I think because I was like, wait, why are they even like, how do they know that this is a bit?
At this point.
Yeah, yeah, even though, yeah, okay.
Even though they didn't believe Tommy.
Right. And they have the other case from wherever, you know, that they yeah. were like, so I guess that's how they got here. But still, it's like, it's very, they're kind of like, rah, rah, rah. Cragen tasks them to ask Leslie DeSantis if Victor Coe ever worked for Man About Town, and he also wants them to find and visit with Victor's older brother to see if they can look around his apartment. I'm not really sure for what, I guess just to see if there might be some type of, like, information on the client, fake Jill, you know?
It's kind of funny because they truly have no reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so that guy could look around the apartment and go, why does he have these expensive chairs?
Yeah, and dun-dun, I wrote, this is a useless scene. But they go to Victor's apartment. His brother is a rich art dealer and lets them in, and they kind of just talk to him. He supports Victor because he wants to, and he says, he's like, oh, I support Victor, I really shouldn't. And then they notice Victor's expensive chairs, and he's like, wait, he can't afford this. This makes no sense. I didn't buy these for him. And then they're like, your brother's a prostitute.
It's such a stupid scene. Like, he's like, oh, wow, these chairs are Ferragamo, and Munch is like, wow, great eye, and he's like, yeah, but I didn't buy them.
Right. Yeah. And so then like, then they're cool. Like, oh, you don't know that your brother's a call girl? And he's like, no, he's a struggling actor.
I'm like, did you just do this? You can embarrass him in front of his brother? It's funny because it's like, really, they're just trying to show us that, whoa, Victor had a lot of extra money, weird. And it's like, okay, you couldn't find a less clunky way to show us that.
Silly. So dun dun to the streets. BNS have found Leslie, and she's telling them. Oh, I don't know if I mentioned that was Funch was handling that scene because it's stupid. So BNS are handling this one. They have found Leslie, and she's freezing. First of all, like, they don't seem very cold, but she's like bundled up in her fur, her like Anora fur, and she's like, ooh, like shivering down these streets. I was like, my goodness, and her blue eyeshadow is just shining in the sun. So she's telling them that she fired Victor because he was shady with her a couple of times. And the last straw was that a client filed a complaint that he had offered her sex for additional cash. So this is the worst client ever. What the hell?
I know. What a narc.
Yeah, this client was like, I don't want to cheat on my husband. I just want you to escort me about town. Isn't that the name of this company? It's Mad About Town. It's not Mad About Dick.
I thought I was just going to go around town.
That was what you promised, Leslie. You promised me that it would be a man escorting me about town. That's your business model, is it not? And then I was propositioned at my expense. At my expense, it wasn't even... Actually, maybe that's why she was mad. She was like, oh, you don't just want to fuck me for free?
I mean, if they're the ones that suggest it, I would definitely be offended. I'd be like, no.
I know.
I already paid money. You want me to pay you more money? I'm a woman for something I can get for free.
Right.
Bye. I love how we started out, we're like this stupid bitch narc, and now I'm like, yeah, I would have told on his ass too for insulting me.
You know what? Justice for this lady, because she's like, excuse me, you think I'm desperate? You think my husband doesn't fuck me? Fuck
Never
you.
Mind. Fuck Victor Coe. Yeah.
Fuck Victor Coe.
I'm calling Leslie.
We've changed our opinion mid-sentence, and that is how open-minded we are.
That is our right.
So she says that she hasn't seen him since, but he did steal a bunch of her clients after she fired him. Yeah, because he's fucking them. You think they're going to stay with you.
Yeah, of course. Poor Leslie. She is just trying to run a business and make money. And she's got these little fucking assholes running around trying to scam her.
I agree. You know what? And more on that later, because I wrote that. And hopefully I remember, because I actually didn't write it. Brittany, I lied to you. I didn't write it at all. So there is bad blood. TLDR. Dun dun, bullpen. Again, I think we're in the bullpen because I was taking notes on where they were. I was trying to. I wrote as a disclaimer, so all of the info, this is where we enter the part of the episode where technically none of this matters. It is not what happened. It has nothing to do with how the crime is solved. I am going to tell us, they put in the
effort. It's in the episode.
It's in the episode. We are recappers, thereby historians. We will recap it because this is what we have committed to do up until Stabler leaves. So the squad checks over Victor's client list to see, again, a bunch of upper-crust, creme de la creme rich women of an advanced stage. They are very impressed by this list, and they mention two names that stuck out to them because they are rich and powerful, but I do not know what they do. Something finance, I think. Something finance. They were like, oh, he's up for a blah, 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 blah award. And I was like, blah, 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 blah.
You're like, who cares? Moving on.
That's what I did.
I love when they say stuff and I'm like, I'm not writing that down.
So the two names that stuck out to them were Claudia Marshall, wife of Darian Marshall. Victor had both of their phone numbers in his phone. And the squad's like, it's kind of weird. It would make sense if he had Mrs. Marshall's number. But why does he have Mr. Marshall's number? So they're thinking blackmail. They literally go, think of blackmail? They're like, yeah, think of blackmail. And Stabler pulls out a bank statement that shows the Marshalls deposited $75,000 into Victor Coe's account recently. And they also see somehow in here that Victor cut a portion of that check into Tommy Dowd's account. So they're like, whoa.
Whoa, something crazy is going on here. This is the most boring part of the episode.
It's so boring, not only because it's not what happened at all, but also it's a little funny when you kind of are like, because they make it sound so fancy and it amounts to like, it's a little funny. Like Victor Coe is kind of just a dick. Cragen tells each set of detectives to go to speak with the Marshalls respectively. So two of them will go talk to Darian Marshall. Two of them will go talk to Mrs. Marshall. He says, and tread lightly, because I bet these people have a door in the Lincoln bedroom. I don't know what that is. I'm old and tired. So Benson and Stabler are with Mrs. Marshall, and they tell her that Victor was attacked. She's shocked, and she asks if Victor is okay, which is something a man would never do if one of his sex worker Johns got hurt.
They're like, oh, ew.
Right? They're like, oh, this girl that you knew romantically, and they're like, who? I don't know who that is.
Well, remember Marnie? Everyone was like, oh, yuck.
Oh, that big whore? Yeah, I know. Mrs. Marshall goes on a monologue about why she's contacting male sex workers. It's one of those like flowery kind of like empowered, like, you know, monologues that women do, what they have women do in these shows. But we've heard it before, actually a couple of times in the last two seasons. I stood by him. I was loyal. I loved him. I accepted his loyalty in return. He cheated on me with a bunch of young people, girls, and now I cheat back because our marriage is out of convenience. Boom. I can only hope. I can only hope. This would be amazing. I'm not fired. I can still spend the money.
Yeah, they're both like, okay, so we'll just like do our thing. Like, don't worry about it.
Right. And her husband now a bunch of 22, because she says he's got a bunch of 22-year-olds to stroke him like a rabbit's foot. I'm like, and that is their problem now. Mrs. Marshall says that she did go on a few dates with Tommy, but he wasn't adventurous enough. So she asked for a new boy. I'm like, ew. What did you want to do?
I know, because he'll like apparently let fucking fake Jill Lazard do whatever she wants, but I guess that's because she's like a little hot.
Yeah, she was kind of hot, because that's what you say. He was like, yeah. Oh, I've got to mention that years ago when I started this recap, that Jill's supposed to be like in her 30s. That's what he said she looked like. So you guys they're all sitting there like, oh wow, this old lady killing people. No, she's like young and buff.
She's like 30. She's probably like our age.
Mrs. Marshall is surprised and not sure why Victor would be in possession of her husband's phone number. And she also looks a little scared. She's kind of like, ew, why?
She's like, ew, that's not good.
She goes, I don't know. Why would that be? Dun, dun, Mr. Marshall's office. So here we have Finn and Munch with him. And Mr. Marshall says that recession upsets him more than his wife's dalliances.
They just kind of stare at him.
Yeah, that was so, he says a couple of savage things that I was like, I kind of like this guy. I kind of get why she doesn't want to leave him. She's like, damn.
He's funny.
He's funny. Yeah. They ask him how basically $75K got transferred into Victor's account from the Marshall's account. And Mr. Marshall says that, yes, he did pay Victor Co. for his discretion after Victor blackmailed him and threatened to expose them. And I think, I don't know if they actually say it. I kind of tuned out here too, but it's essentially for the fact that his wife is paying for sex from a call boy is kind of what they're afraid of him exposing. He's like, yeah, I paid him one time because he was threatening to blackmail us. I prefer discretion, whatever, you know. And so they insinuate that it's possible Mr. Marshall wanted to retain Victor Coe's permanent silence since he didn't sign an NDA. Oh, he signed an NDA, but they're like, what does it matter? You know, he's a nobody, so who cares? And Mr. Marshall says if he wanted Victor dead, he'd already be dead. So literally he answers no questions. They're like, so wouldn't you want him dead if he's like going to blackmail you? He's like, nah, I'll kill him when I feel like it.
Yeah, basically. He's like, he just, he like doesn't even seem that bothered that he's being blackmailed. He's just kind of like, oh, I don't know.
They walk outside whilst eating hot dogs. Finn gets a call from Cragen and telling them to go pick up Tommy Dowd. So this conversation takes 1 second, but during it, Finn also apparently learns that Tommy was able to pay off a $43,000 debt 6 months ago. Munch comments that he should become an escort. And I can't imagine a more of a nightmarish situation. Dun dun, mean interrogation room. Benson and Stabler accuse Tommy of getting the loan money he had where he paid off $43,000 of debt by blackmail. They think he got the money from blackmailing the Marshalls along with Victor. And Tommy's like, no, I got some of the money from Victor Co. And I think they said it was only like $5,000. That money that he got from Victor Co. was because of a favor he did for Victor where he took some of Victor's dates that Victor was supposed to go on. So it sounds like Victor like never paid him for those dates. He just like convinced him to go. Yeah. And then he didn't like change it with Leslie or something. So I'm like, why would that be like a favor? Anyway, then the rest of it came from his boss, Leslie. And so as soon as he says that, these people who just can't not accuse him of things, even if it's true, like they kind of narrow their eyes. They're like, uh-huh. So Tommy admits that, yes, he started sleeping with Leslie, but it was only after she loaned him the money to pay off his family's debts. So he didn't know he was expected to sleep with her until she'd already given him the money. So then he kind of felt like he had to. And he went along with it for a little while. He didn't say he liked it, but he went along with it for a little while. But then she started demanding him, like, constantly. So he tried to break it off. But when he tried to break it off, she threatened to call in his loan. So I don't really know what that means. I know what it sounds like. It means, of course, like, you can kind of do, like, it's intuitive. But I don't know if, like, I guess the loan must have been in his name, but she co-signed it or something so that she can call them and cancel it. I'm like, how does that even work?
I know. Like, she already gave him it sounded like she just gave him money.
They're like, when did this happen? Like, when did this argument transpire? And he says the night before he went out with fake Jill. So cut to the station hallway. Cragen is getting a soda from the vending machine. And Benson and Stabler are recapping for him all that just happened. So now they're all wondering if maybe Leslie is behind these attacks and she's trying to teach a boy's lesson, keep him in line. That would be something like I would do that. I'd be like, well, so I want to make sure the boys don't get out of line. I hired a hitman to handle them. You're like, Paige, you can't have the boys killed. I'm like, how will the boys know?
How else will they learn?
How will the boys learn? So right then, Finn advises them that they pulled in a professional who was caught attacking one of her Johns with a baseball bat. Dot, dot, dot. But that girl did not do this. So... they even have a lineup scene. This is, again, ridiculous.
It's so dumb.
It's so crazy. Okay, so they do that. He's like, oh, we just pulled in a professional who beat her John with a bat. They're like, let's go to do a lineup. We do a lineup for 2 seconds. Tommy comes in, goes, nope, not her. End of it. Goodbye.
And they're like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah.
Yeah. But during the scene, the only thing that happens during the scene that we kind of need is that Stabler walks in right after Tommy leaves and says that the lab has something to tell them. I don't even know. I'm not even sure if I'm going to keep all that. No, again, for the sake of posterity, fine. It goes in. So dun dun, the lab. The lab tech I mentioned earlier, she's here now and she looks like Carrie Russell. And she informs Benson and Stabler that there were 2 DNA profiles identified from the semen located at the crime scene. Sorry, the crime scene, because now we have 2. This was Tommy's crime scene, I believe, right? Sorry. I don't expect you to know. I just want to make sure I wasn't wrong.
I was about to say, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, like, I was.
Whose crime scene
for, like, you're right. You're right. There is not. You're right. Okay. So in general, they found two DNA profiles at the crime scene or scenes. And she's like, well, I know the tech goes, I know it's a hotel, but, you know, and we can't be 1,000% sure, but it seems like they came from the same night. I'm guessing she's saying freshness wise. Yes. It would appear they came from the same night.
Disgusting.
I know. So she also flags to them that the fingerprints found on the weapons indicate that the assailant was a lefty. However, she notes, the fingerprints and palm print patterns are facing the opposite direction of what they would be if fake Jill had been striking the call boys from underneath them, which is, Stabler confirms. He's like, or no, I think it was Benson goes, she can't hit him like that from underneath them. Stabler says, meaning somebody else was in both rooms. And then he goes, so he saves his damsel in distress from a would-be rapist, and then they have sex? All while the victim lies bleeding on the floor, Benson says, squinting her eyes in disgust. What kind of fantasy is that? Stabler says. You know, and I call bullshit because we know his wife likes to do this before they have sex.
Do weird stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no. Kathy, hearkening back to season 1, episode 2, Stabler's recounting a familial rape. And Kathy's stroking his chest, going,
I'm being like, ooh, 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 ooh.
And then, you know, you guys are like, well, Paige, maybe she was just trying to get him in the mood. No, because then later on, she demands, she's like, why aren't you telling me more about work? So obviously she needs it for foreplay.
She likes to hear about work.
Yeah. Okay. So dun dun. I think it's Kathy. No, dun dun. The temporary bullpen. So I think they filmed this in two different shots because, it's like either the hallway, but then also Cragen's office. Olivia's telling the crowd, and this is a crowd because now we have the randoms, probably because they don't know where their desks are. So they're like, can we just join this meeting? Like, Christ.
We'll help.
Pros. So Olivia's explaining that there was semen found in the closets of both the hotels where these attacks happened.
Okay, good. So, wait, how did they miss that the first time?
Why are we only hearing about it now?
I know, they're like, guys, the super important piece of evidence that we've had to, like, you know, sit through, like, stupid scenes. Like, why couldn't they have had a scene of them finding that versus the fake lineup?
Right? The semen's a match for the semen that was found by the lab. So they matched the semens. The semens were the matches. Stabler calls the perps Jack and Jill, and he tells them that he says that the DNA is not in the system. Benson takes his time to bring up the fact that they worked with she was like, remember last year we worked with that guy who had a baby fetish and he wore diapers? And then Stabler goes, yeah, and he had a handmade custom crib built for 4. We were with you all last year.
And we didn't get that episode?
Where was that episode?
We did have fucking Russian love poem and we didn't get that episode?
So annoying. Oh my God, I want the fetish guy. Cragen's like, please stop talking about that guy and move on.
Oh, well, if you want to see CSI is an episode like that called King Baby, if you want to see a really weird, weird episode.
Not King Baby.
King Baby, yeah.
Benson says that none of the bellmen or doormen recognize the sketch of Jill, and they don't know what the partner looks like. Okay, thank you. I'm glad we don't know what the partner looks like, because we never knew. So Finn makes a note that there was no blood found in the hotel bathrooms, so they didn't use the bathrooms to clean up, which leads Cragen to believe that the couple had their own hotel rooms that they would use to freshen up in each of these hotels.
God, they could solve it right now if they wanted to.
They really could.
If they could, like, you know, take a hard little think.
Just dangling right in front of them.
A little thinky think.
Just a little bit of a thinky. They're like, it's almost like they were in the hotel on the same floor at the same time. And we have a list of names. And we even talked to 2 people. Anyway,
let's go get Tommy maimed.
Yeah, before we do that, we're gonna head into the nice interrogation room with Emil Skoda, who's got his Spider-Man mustache going on today, and they're gonna have a little bit of lunch. Benson and Stabler are going to eat some lunch with Emil Skoda. It's the most distracting thing I've ever witnessed. Don't know why we had to. I don't know why the asbestos was happening. I don't know why they had to be doing this. So basically all they do in the scene is they discuss Fall and Ledoux. And it's because this is what Skoda thinks that this couple is suffering from, is Fall Ledoux. So I love Fall Ledoux. Have you ever heard of it?
Yes. Oh, gosh. There's like a few famous cases that feature it.
Yes.
And usually it's kind of hilarious because like one person's like doing something and the second one is like, I guess we'll do that.
Folie de is a French term and it is translated to the madness of two. And it is a psychological disorder. Basically, it's when two people feed into each other's bullshit fantasies and delusions, and they create a fake reality that the two of them, it makes sense to the two of them. So a lot of couple murderers, they kind of... Folie de is interesting because, like, I think there's supposed to be a layer of, like, they don't know what's going on. But, like, I would say most people do know what's going on. They're just, like, validating each other's, like... It's kind of like Fruit Loop-a-Doo, in my opinion.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's why, like, the new Joker movie is called, like, Joker, Folie de Deux.
Oh, yeah, I completely forgot about that. Yes, so if you... but
well, rightly so.
But, yeah, so Folie de Deux, it's when two people feed into... It's usually started by one person, and then the other person who has a weaker mentality will kind of go along with it, I think, just because they feel like they have to. But then eventually they usually will give in to the psychosis in some way. Sometimes it's just because they feel like they have to appease the other person. And then sometimes it's because they, like, actually are crazy. So Skoda says that in the case of this fucking dumb couple, they probably started with a rape fantasy and then it got old and, like, the arousal factor kind of, like, waned down. So they had to up the ante. It's likely now that the only way they can get aroused, says Skoda, is that they do this. They kidnap these people and beat the
brain
ever
them.
Yeah, de-brain them. Yeah, just Salem witch about the head. The madness has escalated between them now. It's also kind of an addiction, is what he says. So it is kind of, that makes sense though. Like when you think about it, you gotta wonder sometimes, it's like, this is such a bad situation. It's only making you guys worse, but it's like the drama. They're like, this is so interesting or something.
Yeah.
So Kragen comes crashing in at this moment. He literally opens the door and he's like, I'm going to cut this short because they found another victim, except this one's dead.
Uh-oh.
That's how he says it. So we get a shot of Benson putting down the gross soup she was about to pour and they all just look so annoyed. And it's confirmed by Stabler's next line. Cut to yet another hotel. Benson and Stabler enter and Stabler says immediately, this is getting old.
It's like, okay, well, catch the fucking people.
Sorry, yeah.
Instead of, like, running around chasing, what were their names? Like, Destin and Marie.
Yeah, Darren and Claudia Marshall, you know, who were just like, can you let us just be gross in peace? So this cute CSI guy is back again. We get him three times, and he shows them the vase that was used to assault this victim. So apparently this was a bad one because this guy is, like, dead. His head's absolutely cracked open.
Like, you can see, like, his brain.
Yeah.
Like, from the comfort of your couch. You're like, yeah. Oh, wow.
Yep, exactly. No, they're like, they went a little hard with this one, literally and figuratively. They do, because if you're wondering, they're like, why wouldn't have anyone have heard this commotion? And the CSI guy says that the vase was so big and spiky that it would have killed him on impact.
Oh, yeah. He's like, see this? That's his brain. And they're like, okay, gross.
Gangs. Now we're at the station again. Kragen is also annoyed. They're all just pissed off that they've had so many hard cases. Sorry. Okay, so the new victim, this most recent victim that died, Greg, he was not in the Man About Town Rolodex, so it doesn't appear that he was a call boy. He was a student at City College, which is where Tommy was going before he dropped out. And Munch is like, yeah, but like everyone goes there. It's like half the city goes there. And Kragen says he doesn't believe in coincidences, so go talk to Tommy. Dun, dun.
Dun, dun.
The park? Oh, yeah, we were at the park. So we're having one of those moments. We haven't had it in a long time. Where Benson and Stabler have a heart-to-heart about the morale of this case while they walk to their next location. So, in this chat, Stabler feels bad for Tommy, and we should not be judging him for being a sex worker. He was only trying to help his mom, and he's a good kid. And what's he supposed to do? He's supposed to flip burgers? That's no way to make a living.
Now, in this day and age, I'm like, with the way minimum wage is, yeah, I'm like, I kind of agree with him.
No, I mean, listen, he's right. I'm just a little frustrated because I think we've encountered a lot of sex workers and they have not got... We encountered a woman who wasn't a sex worker but was just living her
they
best. They were like, she might as well be a sex worker. And then for Tommy, they're like, oh, he's helping his mom.
But but I guess they wanted to make Olivia the dick to this episode because Olivia's like, hmm.
She's kind of just like, well, yeah, but it's illegal. And he's like, yeah, but it's illegal because it's unfair.
Well, she's like, what would we do if he was selling cocaine? And Stabler's like, but he's not.
Not. She's like, yeah, but they're both illegal.
And that she like brings it up. And then at the end, she's like, well, it doesn't matter because it's illegal anyway. It's like she did that thing where she knew she was losing. And she was like, well, anyway, it doesn't matter.
Mean interrogation room. Tommy explains that, yes, he did know Greg, this new victim. I kept calling him the new victim. I'm like, he's the new victim.
He's
in
the
town.
Hot new victim.
The hot new victim. And for some reason, my voice memo wanted it to be Greg with two G's. Okay.
We'll go with it.
We'll go
we
with it.
We don't know.
Greg. Originally, Tommy was booked to go out on the state and escort her to a Broadway show. However, he had meetings with his lawyers about back taxes owed in his mother's store.
So what was their fucking plan? Like, he was going to show up and not immediately be like, oh, fuck. And like, be like, this is her. What was their fucking plan?
I wonder. So that's something I wrote down later. I was like, I mean, it's possible they didn't, like, maybe they didn't know who she was going to give them. But you think if it was them, well, I don't know. Maybe at this point they're like, we don't care. This is a plot flaw when you think about it. Because there's a lot of ways.
And it literally just occurred to me. I was like, wait a fucking minute.
No, you're right. Because, like, if they had called and said, hey, we need a butt, but don't send us Tommy. She'd be like, but aren't you a new customer? And they'd be like, yeah, but we heard Tommy's not good. But then they just, or they're like, fuck it. We risk getting Tommy and then we actually kill him this time.
Do we learn that Leslie kind of knows when it's them? Because she
says they called with a different credit card number and name every time, so she wouldn't know.
So she wasn't trying to get Victor killed?
No, it was just a big coincidence.
This episode's kind of dumb.
No, like,
wait a minute.
That's why I liked it. It was kind of, it's like, what? I know.
Wait, what?
So because Tommy had to go meet with his lawyers, he didn't want to, you know, like, call Leslie to tell her, piss her off. So he called his friend Greg, who we knew from college, and Greg had been bugging him to get him in on the escorting thing for a long time. And I can only imagine the reason why it didn't happen was that he was like, I don't want this life for you, Greggy.
I know. I'm like, why was Tommy being so gatekeepy?
I know. Maybe Greg was handsome and he was like, I don't want you taking my good business, Greg.
Oh, that's probably it. Some like jealousy. We never get to see Greg's face because just his brains.
Tommy contacted Greg, asked him to take the shift over. Greg eagerly accepted. And Tommy didn't let Leslie know again because he didn't want to get a backhand. So she was allegedly unaware of this switch. BNS aren't really convinced of that last thing. And they ask him if they think that maybe Leslie was setting Tommy up to be killed by fake Jill. Tommy says he doesn't think so because he still owed Leslie $28,000. So it wouldn't make sense to kill him.
And also, how would that have worked? He just would have shown up and seen them and left. Unless they did something different with him, like been like, hey, you need to be waiting in the room for me.
It's possible that maybe after, now that they're calling the same business, which also seems stupid, calling the same business twice, they were like, okay, maybe we'll switch it up. We'll say you have to, we're going to leave the door unlocked. He has to meet, you know, lights off. Maybe that's the only way I could see it working. Cause otherwise, yeah, they were kind of just, I mean, when you meet the couple, they are kind of just like, fuck it. you know what? They left. They dropped the ball, guys.
There's no way this plan would have worked. He would have just been like, oh, hey, it's you. I'm going to call the cops.
You're right. So the whole thing, Leslie couldn't have been in on it. I mean, she's not, but like she couldn't have been because that's a dumb plan anyway. You know, so because he would have had to get a new couple to do it. Oh, my God. Wow. My brain is. Benson asks how often the sex part of the package came up on Leslie's books. It was a weird way she asked. Basically, she's like, so I know that sometimes you'll take an extra couple hundred for sex, but how much does it come through Leslie's books? Because she said none. First, he calls Leslie a pimp. He's like, she's a pimp. Well, she's a nicer pimp than a lot of them. So Tommy says that the clients get to pay an extra $200 an hour if they want to sleep with an escort, and they're essentially guaranteed whatever they want as long as the escort is willing. Again, must
that
be really
like nice.
Must be really fucking nice.
He like makes it sound, he's like, as long as the escort is willing. I'm like, so you agree to it.
You have to agree to it. Yeah. So if they don't ask up front, they probably will contact. They probably ask her up front, too, because it wasn't like midnight. You could be like, hey, just texting you, you know, like, Leslie, is it OK if I fuck this guy? Like, they probably would ask up front and be like, hey, on this date, I want like sex.
She seems fine to me.
Right. I agree.
Besides cajoling Tommy into boning her. But besides that.
Who would want to force someone to buy? These women are so crazy. They're like, yeah, let me force you to fuck me via money or extortion. I'm like.
Leslie works with like a ton of like good looking guys. You're telling me like not one of them like kind of wasn't into like a whole, had like a little boss fantasy.
Yeah.
That would make a pass at her.
No. And she was like good looking too. I agree. So Tommy says that Victor Ko got greedy and went rogue for not reporting the sex money. So yeah, he was the one, instead of being like, oh, no, we have to ask Leslie, he was just taking all the sex money because he was like, I'm the one doing all the work, so I'm keeping the sex money.
It's like, then start your own business, Victor.
And he did. And he took his sex money clients with him. I like how she was shocked. She was like, what? Those clients went with Victor? It's like, yeah, he's the one with the penis. Again, women could never, a female sex worker could never, without fear of retribution. She, like, Leslie was like, yeah, he fucked me, and she did nothing about it. Like, a male pimp would be like, I'm gonna murder you. Dun dun, station hallway. Cabot is meeting with Finn and Munchin Krieg. Sorry, I'm laughing. Oh, boy. So they're talking about the theory that Leslie is in cahoots with fake Jill and her accomplice, working to have her own call boys taken out. Cabot says that there is nothing they can do to bring Leslie in, since it's only a theory, but then she casually suggests seeing if Tommy Dowd would agree to wear a wire.
Have they learned nothing?
They have learned nothing. They have learned nothing. We have nothing to offer him, Finn says. So Cabot responds that it's the chance to do the right thing, and if he truly feels bad about his friend Greg, maybe he'll take it.
Which wasn't even his fucking fault.
Wasn't even his fault in, what is the Hallmark movie?
He's gonna feel bad, so he'll do a favor for his friends, the police. Who's he, Tito?
So cut to, quick cut, Tommy goes, I'm not wearing a wire. And then basically Cabot just browbeats him into doing it. She's like, you should do it because it's the right thing and you killed Greg.
And he's like, okay, I guess. And I'm like, so they know this couple's like suffering from a delusion, but they're like, oh, but Leslie's also in on it. And I'm like, well, that wouldn't that make it a folie à trois?
Yeah, right. That would be a folie à trois. A folie à la trois. It's true. Oh my god. So,
but meanwhile they're just like, no, wear a wire just because we want this to happen.
So dun dun, we're outside of Leslie's apartment. I think it's Leslie's apartment. Benson and Stabler are sitting in a locked car 50 yards away from the door to Leslie's apartment. No, I'm kidding. But they are outside in a car outside of Leslie's apartment building. It's a stakeout. We're here. Tommy's wearing the wire. He's inside the apartment. So we hear from the radio that Benson and Stabler are listening to Leslie say, water's almost ready. I'll get the linguine. Tommy responds. They're cooking a pasta for their date night. Next, Leslie asks Tommy if there's something wrong because something seems off. Tommy pauses for 20 exact minutes. And then Stabler says, say something, Tommy. So Tommy follows up with a really smooth line. Greg's dead.
Like, and she probably doesn't even fucking know who Greg is.
Right? No, she's not supposed to know who this is. But Leslie is no chill either because she goes, oh, thank God it wasn't you.
It's kind of, because she's kind of awesome.
Because she's a little awesome. I know, very casually, as if he just said, like, oh my God, you'll never guess, like, so-and-so had COVID, but I tested negative. She's like, thank God. Doesn't seem to care, but he switched out his shift, even though you're not supposed to do that as a person who's scheduled. So again, weird, fine, okay. Greg was supposed to be an escort to the Broadway play, not a hotel, Tommy says. And Leslie's like, well, you know the deal. If they want to go to a hotel after, you take them. They do kind of a back and forth where he's like, oh, dying's not part of the game. And she's like, oh, like, calm down.
Shut up.
Yeah, like, it's okay. And he's like, and Victor? To which Leslie responds, look, I'm sorry about your friend, but Victor got what he deserved. We got her, Stabler says. So then we hear Leslie kind of like say something to the effect of, oh, don't be upset, baby. Come here. Indicating that she's going to touch. She's reaching for Tommy. Her old crone hands reaching for young Tommy. And Tommy goes, I'm not in the mood. And then we hear her go, what's this? And Tommy says, it's my Walkman.
And Benson and Stabler are just sitting in the car, not a care in the world.
Not a care. As soon as he said we got her, they should have been up and out of their seats. But no, we're listening to her reaching for the wire. Oh, it's my Walkman. And Stabler goes, she found it. And Benson's like, let's move. And I'm just sitting on my bed screaming. My arms are in the air. I'm tearing my hair out. I'm ripping my clothes off. I am crying. I'm in mourning for the logic that should have existed in this scene.
They're like, oh, uh-oh.
I cannot fucking believe this is happening again. Why were they not outside the door?
I mean, I guess they were probably sexist, and they were like, she's just a woman. She couldn't hurt him.
No, absolutely.
Wrong.
Even though they were like, she's basically nothing but a pimp. And it's like, well, then her pimp hand. Cut to outside of the hallway where they should have fucking been the entire time, and we hear her screaming at Tommy, you ungrateful little bastard. At the same time, we hear her throw a pot of boiling water on Tommy, and he begins to scream. So they open the Benson's like, batter the door down now! And they have a battering ram that, again, took them five fucking ever to start. Like, she announced what she was about to do practically before they started battering the door down.
Well, the best part is it's like, they were like only like a second too late, even though they took forever for them to run up there.
I guess that she was probably just like going, what is this, Tommy? What is this? For 20 minutes.
Yeah, until they got up there.
He probably said some mean things to her they didn't hear him say. He was probably like, you're a fat old bitch. And she's like, you bastard.
She was like, stop speaking disrespectful to me or I am going to throw this pot of boiling water. He's like goading her.
Yeah, he's like calling her crazy. He's like, you're crazy. This isn't a wire. It's my Walkman. You're crazy. You have dementia, Leslie. He's like yelling at her. He's like, I don't even love you, Leslie. Your touch makes me crazy. And I wipe my mouth. And she just throws the pot of boiling water on him. So they finally get the door open. Tommy is writhing in pain on the ground, covered in noodles. Simply covered.
It's almost like a little funny. Because there's spaghetti everywhere.
It kind of looked like the water had begun to curdle or something. It was like really thick water all over. It was like, it looked like curds and whey on top of the noodles.
And Leslie looks so unbothered. She's like, oh, hi.
So Stabler cuffs Leslie and reminds her that murdering a witness is a death penalty crime. She didn't know he was a witness.
He wasn't even really a witness to anything. He doesn't fucking know anything.
She goes, screw you. And then she spits on Tommy before Stabler pulls her away.
She's wicked mad.
How did he let her do that?
They Gina Silvered Tommy so hard.
And now, yeah, and now we say it. This was another, you guys are probably thinking it, this is another Gina Silver award. We have a lot to pick from.
This has been the most Gina Silver since Gina Silver.
Yes. True to form. Benson is saying, hang in there, Tommy. And I'm like, oh my God. You're going to say that to a man who's just been, hang in there. Okay, yeah, let me just hang in here so I can walk around deformed.
Hang in there. I'd be like, fuck you. I'm covered in noodles.
I'm covered in ling fucking guini.
And I was a 10. I'm probably going to be a 4.
Dun dun. We're at the hospital. Tommy has second degree burns on his neck, hands, face, arms. So yeah, his whole body.
They also are acting like he might die. But I don't think he is.
I don't think so either. And then when we saw him in the background, it didn't look like he'd gotten any burns. So it's kind of almost
okay.
It's almost like the beautiful person version. So Tommy's mother exits Tommy's hospital room and needless to say, she's pissed. She goes, I step away for a cup of tea and this is what happens.
I kind of love this because Cabot's like, oh, but like, you know, he helped us get Leslie. And she's like, yeah, if he survives, I'm sure he'll be thrilled.
Even taking notes on this moment was a little chaotic because it was so kind of ridiculous. She's like, how'd this happen? And they're like, he was helping us. And she's like, so you made him. And Cabot's like, look, he was doing the right thing. He helped us. And we caught the girl. And they're like, the girl who burned his face off, but not the one who tried to kill him, right? She's like, well, yeah.
She's like, I can't, if he ever comes back to consciousness, I'll let him know.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll be thrilled.
So Tommy's mom leaves on a, look what you did to him, goes in. So Cragen tells Benson and Stabler to start typing up their reports before the Inquisition begins, because we all know that IAB is going to do
IAB is like, they just sat down after like filing the last piece of paperwork from their last situation, and they're like, all right, ready to start a new case, and they get it comes across their desk, they're like, what the fuck?
They literally just got back to Rochester, now they have to turn around. So dun dun, we're at Riker's Island. Leslie is not wearing any makeup, and it's just so jarring because they had her in pounds of makeup, and now she looks just like a regular person. Like, not in a bad way, but I'm like, who is this? Like, I did not recognize her at first. Alex is chastising her for almost getting Alex is yelling at her for almost getting Tommy killed, you know, when Greg was supposed to get killed. And I'm like, oh, isn't this pot calling kettle black after pot landed on Tommy's face?
I know. Leslie is like, probably like, okay.
She's like, we both almost got him killed if you want to look at it like that, counselor. Leslie denies this. She's like, I did not set them up. I don't know these people. She denies that fake Jill is her and her accomplice were like working with her to kill the boys or get the boys back in line. She vehemently denies knowing the couple and says that every time they called to book a date with Man About Town, they use a different credit card number, and sometimes a man would call, but then sometimes a woman would call. So she virtually just had no clue that they were like the same person. I don't know. I would have expected her to do a little bit more thorough research, because it sounds like her clients, like, from on the one hand, the clients are upper crust, right? Like ladies. But then on the other hand, she's like, I don't know who these fucking people were.
Basically, we're discovering Tommy got his face burned off for nothing. Yeah. He literally doesn't know anything. But on the other hand, she is responsible for the fact that, like, she didn't really, like, give a shit about their safety.
Done. We're at the station now. The squad confirms that Leslie's telling the truth because each date was booked with a different stolen credit card. So just sum it up. The common denominator is that all of the credit cards that this couple used were from the same business run out of New York, and it's a mail order business. Basically, all the credit cards, they were able to trace them back to this one vendor out of New York who, it's like, handles their finances or their accounts. So they've all been stolen from this company. Cut to the vendor, Barnett, Sloan, and Rich Guy. So one of the company partners who handles the Scott account, we don't know who these people are, but apparently they're some of the impacted victims. So he says that it's Gary Sutton, but Gary actually left early for the day because it's his anniversary. He and his wife are celebrating their anniversary, and they had to go to dinner and a show.
Hmm. Meaning that, like, the rest of this whole episode didn't need to happen.
Yes. So Benson and Stabler, it's one of those moments where the partner's kind of trying to be like, well, Gary's not here right now. Maybe you come back later. And they're like, yeah, where's his office? So they go into his office. And they find a picture of Gary's wife, Darlene, on his desk. Stabler picks it up, turns to Olivia, and says, do you recognize her? They both look at the photo, and we see that it is the woman from Altoona, Pennsylvania, of the couple that they spoke to at the beginning of the episode when they were investigating Tommy's assault at the hotel.
They could have solved... This episode could have been an email.
And they had a sketch of fake Jill or Darlene we're coming to find, but I guess it was a bad sketch.
Because they'd already met her and they weren't like, oh, that kind of looks like the lady from the hotel.
Also, I would not have remembered. I would have been like, oh, it's another one. Because she has like a very standard looking like...
I could not pick her out of a lineup.
What was that show? Dharma and Greg. She's kind of like Dharma.
Oh, yeah.
It's Dharma and Greg hair. Okay, so done. We go to the Sutton home, which is definitely an apartment they commissioned from one of Leslie's elderly clients because it's like ridiculously outfitted for people in their 30s. They find a stack of credit cards on the nightstand with different names on them. So these are the stolen credit cards that they've been using. Benson says that it appears Gary Sutton has been using his wealthy clients' names to apply for these credit cards. And because he handles their bills, he's able to spend without noticing. That happens a lot, actually. Stabler's also been examining this, like, notebook. And I think, I didn't read it, but based on his reaction, like, 2 seconds from now, I think it's, like, an itemized list of all the purchases that from these credit cards, these stolen cards. So that it's like how probably Gary Sutton tracks the spendages. Cut to the streets, and it's a quick scene. During the shuffle, they're like going to their car. Stabler informs us and Benson that in that log, he saw that one of the credit cards was used to book a hotel room for that same night at 7 p.m., which Benson says is 15 minutes from now. So it seems that the couple is about to strike again. The hotel in question. Finn and Munch. Oh, yeah. He also was like, call Finn and Munch. So they're already there. And they show the bartender on duty a photo of fake Jill, knee Darlene, and ask if she's been there yet. So the bartender points to a young man sitting just behind them and says that the same woman was with him there, but she left and went upstairs. The entire squad now rolls up on this random man, this whore. And they kind of talk to him like he's being difficult, even though it's fucking weird, you know? Like,
I know, he's like, hello, and they're like, it's your lucky day.
Yeah, they're like, are you an escort? Did you see this woman? Do you have a room key that you plan to go up and meet her in this room? And he's like, and so what if all of that is true? And Stable goes, then this is the luckiest day of your life, which is very cocky for a gentleman who was involved in someone's maiming 2 days earlier.
No, shut up, Elliot.
Yeah, it's really cocky when you guys just got someone's face melted off. Okay, luckiest day of your life. So they get the room key. They head upstairs. They enter the room and it's dark, just pitch black. And Darlene is laying in bed and we hear her go, is somebody there? What do you want with me? Right then, Stabler turns on the light next to the bed. And so she sees him. It's all the cops are like, it's, the room is filled with cops now. Right next to the bed is also the closet. So Stabler turns on the light, opens the closet to reveal Gary Sutton standing there waiting in his underwear like a fucking cock. Gary goes, don't shoot. And then Darlene, again, seeing that this is the cops, right? She sees that it's the cops. She goes, help me, Gary. But Stabler is now cuffing him, his bitch ass, and he's shaking like a leaf. So Olivia comes over to Darlene. She's on the bed going, help me, Gary. And she's like, fantasy's over, Darlene, get up. It's so fucking funny.
She's so done.
It's all this buildup and neither of these two are fighting back. And Darlene's just holding on for dear life.
They have caused so much trouble. They don't even know.
They don't even know. And like, Darlene's like now involving the police in this fancy. And they're like, let's go, Darlene. So as she's being cuffed, Olivia's cuffing her. Darlene's like, you didn't save me, you bastard. And she's positively grunting in frustration. She's going, no, no, no. She's like literally and figuratively sexually frustrated. I'm obsessed with her.
Oh, she's so funny.
Darlene is played by Marguerite McIntyre, who she actually did have a couple of recurring roles, so I'll list them here. I didn't watch any of these shows, but they are shows, and they were big. She was Sheriff Liz Forbes in the Vampire Diaries. Nicole Traeger in Kyle XY. Do you remember Kyle XY?
I only remember the poster where he lifts up a shirt, and they're like, the man with no belly button? Oh my god.
He's an alien. He didn't have an umbilical cord. It took me forever when people were like, oh wow. I was like, what does that even mean? They're like, he wasn't born. She was also Jean Lyle on Loving. Dun dun, the mean interrogation room. I think they were trying to go for a really good, like, cool, dramatic look here. Because it actually is, if you didn't know what had just transpired in this entire episode, it's a cool shot. We've got wide shot. It's like dark in the room with like one light cast over Gary Sutton, the cuck. And we got Munch in the background, Finn in the foreground. It's like a really cool shot. But Gary is describing his cuckedness and how he got here.
Basically, wasn't she cheating on him?
Well, I have a note about that because I'm like unclear about what he thinks happened. So Gary explains, he does not give us a timeline for this, but one night he came home and he hears noises coming from the bedroom. So he goes in the bedroom and he sees that Darlene is in there and that there's a man on top of her and they are struggling. So he thinks this guy is raping Darlene and naturally he fights him off of her. Apparently Darlene explained that this man was a delivery man and she had invited him in. And Gary says that she also knew that Gary was going to be home soon. So he goes, I was her hero and it turned me on.
So many questions.
Right. So they let the guy go.
Like he said, yeah, they were like, they fought him off. I'm like, did he run away? Was he like laying there unconscious? Like,
yeah, he goes, I roughed him up a little. So I guess they didn't like beat him. They didn't, you know, debrain him like these guys, but they roughed him up a little. They let him go. They didn't call the police, but neither did he. And so I wrote here, yeah, it's never confirmed for us. If Gary thinks that Darlene invited this delivery man in for sex, and then she was just kind of aroused by the idea that he, like, was willing to defend her, or if she invited him in, like, and I don't know if he believes that she was actually being raped or not. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Because she knew he'd be home soon if she like set that guy up to be like, oh, wouldn't it be hot if he like walked in on this?
Right. So I'm believe by his tone that he thinks it's that version, that she set this guy up. And then the guy himself, maybe he was just so freaked out or like embarrassed because he was a delivery guy. Maybe he was like, fuck, I can get fired. So like, I'm not going to report these two. The escorts were Darlene's idea. You don't have to tell me twice. Shocker. I mean, her reaction in that hotel room, you didn't have to tell me twice. So Finn wonders why Gary went along with this, and Gary says that he loves Darlene and that she has a problem. And they're like, yeah, but you didn't have to go along with it. Yeah, exactly.
He's like, yeah, you're right. I don't know.
He goes, no, she needed this. She needs it. So I'm like, he's kind of 50-50 followed it because, like,
he knows it's bad, but he's also like,
she needs it. Yeah. Yeah. Outside the interrogation room, Cragen and Cabot discuss what they think will happen if this goes to trial. And I say if because I think that they could also plea this out. Like, they anticipate that Darlene's lawyer will come up with a diesel psych defense. And although she is just as guilty as Gary, because Gary was the actual killer, like he's the one who like hit these guys over the head and end up killing Greg, he'll likely get 25 to life, but Darlene will walk free on insanity defense, as she should.
As she should, because she actually is unwell.
I was going to say, after this next scene, I'm not really entirely sure that she knew what was wrong. I think Gary was the one who knew this was wrong, and it was his job to explain to her, baby, this is wrong.
It was his job to, like, call, like, a psychiatrist and be like, hey, this is Gary's fault.
This is Gary's fault. Dun-dun, we are in the nice interrogation room, and Darlene is launching into it. So she's biting her lip and giving them both, and Olivia and Stabler are here, and she's giving them both, like, the sexy eyes. She's like, Gary said he would kill for me. It was the most powerful aphrodisiac I've ever felt in my life. She's still got her Dharma hair. So Benson, and they both look, they look like how I feel when my friends start kissing in front of me. I'm just like, please stop. Benson asks who Gary was rescuing her from. And I don't know why they asked it like that, because I feel like they could have just been like, do you mean the men you guys tried to kill? And Darlene says matter-of-factly, the men. On the subway, at the hotel, at the store. And she basically lists every location known to man.
She's ever been. She's just like, I could see their eyes on me. I knew what they wanted.
I knew what they wanted. I knew if they had the chance to ravage me, they would. And she's shaking her head kind of like, tisk, tisk, tisk.
I know, like, But who could blame them?
I was, with my mouth open, I was like, I want this delusional confidence. Where is mine? Can we bottle it? I know a lot of people who act like this. I do. But I don't know why when Darlene did it, it was beautiful. It was so pure. She was like, I know what they think of me.
Is she one of like the more iconic people? Because I remember this scene.
I do too.
Like at the beginning of this episode, I was like, oh, fuck, it's that lady. She's like one of the more iconic I'm going to say criminal loosely, because she actually, I think, just needs a lot of help.
And she does go on to say, you know, she goes, that businessman from Missouri, he didn't want to play, but the escorts, they would do anything I wanted.
So I'm like, oh, wait, so you're a little bit in on it.
A little bit in on it. That was where I was like, no, I want crazy her. I know. I really like that. I know. That was, I was
forgot about. Don't worry. She turns it around and dials it back up.
I was going to say, she could be in and out of lucidity at this point. You know how sometimes, like, you'll be talking to somebody and they're like, here they are. No, they aren't. She goes, and all the time, I'd be thinking about Gary, my brave, strong man, how he would save me. And Benson and Stabler are now both sighing and looking around like, eek.
They're like, oh my God, can we go home now?
We wish it was the conspiracy. So after she's done, and she, you know, Darlene's shaking her head. She's just like, yeah, this dirty world full of men who want to rape me. And then she goes, can I go home now?
Yes, queen. Yes, you can.
So Stabler looks like he's about to short circuit or cry. And he slowly goes, you're not going home, Darlene. You're going to jail. Darlene. Incredulous. She goes, she backs up. She kind of like steals herself. She's like, jail. She goes, I can't go to jail. As if she didn't just admit to doing it. She's like, yeah, I know. I tried to. Yeah, I know. I know.
She's like, I can't go to jail.
I can't go to jail.
Too sexy.
The inmates, the guards, what would they do to me?
And then I was like, sweetheart, you're going to a women's jail.
So then she kind of takes this moment in. She's like, God, what will I do? She's what I. And then she locks eyes with Stabler. She realizes that he is a man. And she reaches over across the table and grabs his hand. She goes, you'll protect me, won't you? And it's not a question.
She's like, You're new Gary.
You're new Gary. You'll protect me, won't you, new Gary? And Stabler looks like he's watching a slow car wreck.
He looks so terrified. He's like,
there's nothing she can grab and hit us with, right? Executive producer Dick Wolf.
Oh my God.
That one.
I mean, the biggest shame is we don't spend more time with Darlene. We have to deal with, like, Tommy and his gang of rabble-rousers.
Brittany and I were losing it texting. I wish I had saved it in a lot of ways. I'm going to go back and read it because it was just so fucking funny.
It is very iconic behavior.
It's aspirational levels of delusion. Like, I truly... she seems happy, okay? This woman's going to jail, but she is happy. That's all I'm taking from this. She thinks everyone on planet Earth is sexually attracted to her, and I cannot pay myself to think one person is.
She, like, decided she was kind of done with her husband and just, like, locked eyes with the next hot guy she saw and was like, you'll protect me now.
Yeah, exactly. No, literally, she's like, to jail? Can you imagine? Who will keep me from jail? Who even has the power? Gary can't beat the system. Gary's not a lawyer. He's only a finance person. Who will... Cop, you will protect me, won't you?
You will protect me.
The Darlene Award for Delusional Excellence. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in again. I don't really have any closing thoughts. So next time, let's see.
I will be telling the story next week. Why did I say it like that?
I will be.
I will be. But it is season 2, episode 18. Manhunt. It's the sequel where Darlene's on the hunt for a man. I fucking wish. It actually kind of sounds a little boring.
Oh my God, that would be the greatest. We follow Darlene in jail as she hunts for a man. But in her mind, she's the one being hunted.
She's like, oh no. I see the way you look at me. And they're like, I have to look at you. This is inspection time to make sure you don't have contraband in your cell.
Darlene was amazing.
I love her.
And you know me, I hate when people expect me to be impressed by them or think that they are, like, more beautiful or whatever. But for some reason, when Darlene leaned in and was like, people on the subway, in the streets, in the stores, over there in Altoona, Pennsylvania, where I claim to be from, they're all trying to rape this.
It was so Aries that I looked up her birthday, and she's a Taurus, but it's like the next sign over.
Yeah, it is. We'll probably end up sticking with every 2 weeks at this point, I think.
I think it's been working for us.
Yeah. I mean, the holidays kind of got in the way the last two times. But just to set expectations, we're going to go every 2 weeks. If we end up switching back to weekly, that will be amazing.
Follow us on Instagram @EliteSquadPod.
Bye, Sydney. Bye, Perth.
Bye, Squad.